cold sweat gathered at the nape of his neck. Could Yasmin have written this? He wondered, and quickly rejected the possibility. It didn't sound like her at all, and Yasmin was far too frightened of the witch to deface one of her precious storybooks. It must have been another prisoner. Before me and Yasmin. Alex stared up at the library. I have to keep searching and see if she wrote more in a different book. She might have learned something important. She might have escaped. Before Alex could get out of his seat, however, he heard the familiar clicking sound of a bone key turning in the lock. He slipped the book of novellas beneath his desk and grabbed a pencil, trying to look as though he had been dutifully at work this entire time. The door opened. 8. Beautiful Darkness.
Hey,
Yasmin said, stepping into the room.
Hey,
Alex said as naturally as possible. Yasmin's goggles hung around her neck. There were fresh scratches on her arm. Her apron was splattered with some yellow, viscous substance. She shook the dirt out of her hair and slipped the Mets cap on her head.
Dinner will be ready in like an hour, she said. So you should finish up whatever you're doing.
Thanks, Alex said.
Okay then.
She turned around as if to leave, and then turned back.
That story you read last night? It didn't suck.
Alex looked down at the desk so Yasmin didn't see the blush spreading across his face.
You really think so?
He asked. She gave him a strange look.
This can't be the first time someone said you're a good writer. Your English teacher must love you.
Not exactly, Alex said. I do okay in school with essays and stuff, but it's not the same. And I've never shared my notebook stories before.
Is it like you said yesterday? Yasmin asked. You afraid people will think you're weird?
He nodded.
Well, you don't have to worry about that happening with me, Yasmin said. I already think you're weird. You can't make it any worse.
Thanks, Alex said, unable to tell from her stone-faced expression if she was joking or not. Maybe that's just the way she is, he thought. This might be an attempt to befriend me. If so, Alex couldn't mess it up. He needed Yasmin's help if he wanted to escape the apartment. Unfortunately, the girl was already turning to go. To keep the conversation alive, Alex asked the first question that popped into his head.
Did you live here in the building? You know, before?
Yasmin gave a quick shake of her head.
Then how did you get here? Alex asked. I don't like to talk about it, okay?
She left the library and headed toward the kitchen.
That's cool, Alex said. He held the door open as he called after her. I was just curious how Natasha tricked you into coming inside. With me, it was a scary movie.
Yasmin stopped and looked back over one shoulder.
What does that even mean? She asked. I heard it playing behind the apartment door, Alex said. It called to me. I couldn't stop myself from knocking. A movie? She asked in disbelief. That's how Natasha got you? It wasn't my fault, Alex said, growing angry. Magic, remember? It brainwashed me.
Whatever.
Well, how did you get trapped then? Alex asked.
He looked at her cap and scoffed.
Let me guess, you heard the Mets playing on TV, 9th inning, and you just couldn't help yourself.
Her expression grew cold.
You want to know what happened? She asked, stepping forward. Fine. My friend Amina lives in this apartment building, on the 12th floor. Only when I came to see her that Saturday, the elevator stopped on the 4th. Weird, but no big deal, right? I get off the elevator thinking I'll just take the stairs when I smell the most amazing thing. Kusamishi.
Yasmin registered Alex's confused look and added,
That's rice and lamb, or chickpeas if you're a vegetarian like me, all mashed together inside squash, cooked with lemon juice, mint, and a ton of garlic. sounds delicious, Alex said, stomach grumbling.
It is, replied Yasmin.
Her voice softened.
My Sita, Grandma, and I used to make it together. As soon as I smelled it, I ran down the hallway, no longer thinking straight. I was convinced that if I knocked on the door to apartment 4E, Sita would answer.
Yasmin looked away.
She didn't, of course. How could she? My Sita's been dead for over a year. But for that one moment, I was positive that she had been returned to me. And then finding out it was all a trick, it was like losing her all over again.
For a few moments, Alex didn't know what to say.
I'm sorry,
he finally managed. Yasmin wiped away the tears that had begun to fall from her eyes.
So what was the movie?
She asked.
What? The one you heard through the apartment door.
Oh, Alex said, wishing that he had never brought it up in the first place.
Night of the Living Dead.
Yasmin shrugged her shoulders.
Never heard of it.
She turned and left. This time, she didn't look back. After dinner, Natasha set up the oil diffuser and settled into her chair. Alex took his place next to her. Despite everything, he was excited to read the story he had picked out.
Natasha's right, he thought. I do love an appreciative audience. You able to work better without that disgusting furball in the room?
She asked. Yes, Alex said. Thank you.
This can be a good home for you, storyteller,
Natasha said as Yasmin took her place on the love seat and primly folded her hands in her lap.
A place where you can be yourself. I was thinking about what you told me yesterday, how you wanted to sacrifice your poor little notebooks so you could be as boring as other children your age. I'm curious about something. Being different isn't anything new for you, is it? Truly, you've been blessed with these dark thoughts your entire life.
She leaned forward and clasped her hands beneath her chin.
So why the sudden change of heart? What happened?
Alex almost told her, but his storytelling instincts again warned him that it would be best to keep the real story of the nightbooks to himself. The witch wouldn't hurt him, because if she did, she'd never find out the truth. Just like Scheherazade, he thought.
Nothing specific happened, Alex said. It was just time for a change. Is that so?
Asked Natasha. She smirked, clearly seeing through his lie, but allowing it to pass for now. The meaning in her haughty expression was clear. You'll tell me eventually. It's not like you're going anywhere.
I left you fresh paper in the library, she said, eyeing the notebook in his hand. Why are you still using that old thing?
Just used to it, I guess, Alex said.
Give it here.
She flicked her wrist and the book flew into her hands. Alex jumped in surprise and Natasha cackled heartily.
That was a good spell, no?
Amazing. Alex said when it was clear that she was waiting for a response. Compared to creating magical rooms that bent the laws of reality, making a book fly into your hand was pretty small potatoes. Nevertheless, Natasha seemed immensely impressed with herself. Apparently, Alex wasn't the only one who enjoyed an audience. She turned the notebook in her hands.
What happened here?
She asked, examining the outside of the book. The back and front covers had peeled away in several sections, exposing raw strips of white. Only a rubber band kept the loose pages from slipping away.
You have a temper tantrum when writing wasn't going your way?
Alex hesitated, not wanting to tell Natasha any more about himself than necessary. When her eyes narrowed, however, he began to talk.
That started as my writing journal when I was in the fourth grade. He said. My teacher told us to cover it with pictures of things we liked, so the journals would be more personalized. I went online and printed out all my favorite things,
Zombies, monsters, killer dolls. It was really hard to fit them all on the notebook, but I worked at it, cutting each picture exactly right so it all fit together like a puzzle. Took me the entire weekend, but it was worth it. I couldn't wait to start writing. The smile that had blossomed on Alex's face suddenly faded. And then I brought it to school. I saw how different mine was from everyone else's. They had all printed out pictures of athletes, cute animals, boy bands, photos of friends and family. We had to leave the notebooks out on our desk that first day, like a museum, and the other kids kept staring at mine and giving me weird looks. I took the journal home that night and tore all the pictures off. It became my first notebook. Natasha stared at him for a long time and sighed deeply.
"I am all kinds of mystified by you, boy," she said. "The beautiful darkness that dances through your brain is a cause for celebration. And yet, for some strange reason, you run from it. Why is that?"
"I just want to be like everyone else," Alex said. Natasha laughed.
"What makes you think you have a choice?" she asked.
She handed him the notebook and pressed a button on the oil diffuser. The air shimmered as the misting room came into being.
"You're not like everyone else, and there's nothing you can do about it. We are what we are. These stories, they're just the real you bubbling to the surface. Weird and dark and twisted."
Alex felt his face growing warm. Natasha was saying everything that he had always feared. "She's right," he thought. "There's darkness running through me. Why else would I have all these terrible ideas in my..."
"Oh, goodness,"
Natasha said, her face cloaked by blue mist.
"Now you're all sad and misty-eyed. Hey, you know what always cheers me up? A story. So get to it."
The shape in the mirror. Katie loved vampires. She had read all the books and watched all the movies. She knew all the rules. A vampire couldn't enter a house without being invited first. They didn't cast a reflection. You became a vampire by getting bitten or drinking vampire blood. Sometimes Katie thought it would be cool to be a vampire. She made the mistake of telling this to some kids at lunch. They decided that Katie was weird and started to bully her. It spread like wildfire throughout the school. It got so bad that Katie and her family had to move to a different town. Their new house wasn't as nice as their old house. There was a musty smell that wouldn't go away no matter how many times her parents scrubbed the floors. Even weirder, the former occupants had abandoned some of their furniture, as though they had left in a hurry. An old sofa, several bookcases, the mirror in Katie's room. It was really old, with strange symbols carved into the wooden frame. Katie's dad offered to move it to the basement, but Katie told him no. She liked creepy things. The next morning, Katie saw something unusual. Her room was on the first floor, and the way the mirror was turned, you could look into it and see through her bedroom window all the way to the house across the street. Behind her reflection, she saw a dark shape in her neighbor's front yard. Katie turned around and peeked through her window, thinking that it must be a dog or something. The front lawn was empty. When Katie looked back in the mirror, however, she could see the shape again. In fact, she thought it had gotten a little closer. She checked again. Through the window? No shape. In the mirror? Shape. It was impossible. Katie called her big brother to show him, but the shape had completely vanished. Her brother shook his head and called her a freakazoid like he always did. He missed his friends and blamed Katie for the sudden move. The shape didn't appear for 3 more days. When it finally returned, there was no doubt that it had gotten closer. Instead of sitting on her neighbor's front lawn, the shape had crossed to the middle of the street. Katie still couldn't tell what it was. The reflection was blurry, as though that part of the mirror was smudged. She thought it might have been some kind of animal. Katie didn't see the shape for a very long time after that. Eventually, she figured that it had all just been a figment of her imagination. But then she looked in the mirror one night and saw the shape peeking through her window. She could see it clearly now. It had bat-like wings folded around its body like a black robe and eyes as red as blood. A single claw reached up and scratched the glass. Katie covered the mirror with a blanket. She told her parents what she had seen. They exchanged a worried glance and said they would get rid of the mirror first thing in the morning. Her father told Katie to sleep in the guest room. She was trying to do just that when her brother walked in. He said that he had overheard their parents talking. They didn't believe that there was really a shape in the mirror. They thought Katie was crazy, and tomorrow some men in white coats were going to come and take her away forever. Katie decided that there was only one way to prove that she was telling the truth so her parents didn't send her away. When she was sure that everyone was asleep, she snuck up to her room and pulled the blanket off the mirror. The shape was standing right behind her reflection. Its ancient, scrunched-up face was covered by a thin layer of fur. It reached down and wrapped its long talons around Mirror Katie. Then it unfurled its massive wings and rose out of sight, taking the reflection with it. Katie stared into the mirror. She saw nothing but the empty room behind her. The shape was gone. Her reflection was gone. She fainted. Katie woke up the next morning, hating sunlight. By nighttime, two long fangs had punched through her upper gums. It turned out that she wasn't such a vampire expert after all. She had always thought that people lost their reflection after they became vampires. Now she knew it was the other way around. First, your reflection was stolen. Then the change began. Her stomach rumbled. Katie crept down the hallway to her brother's bedroom. He was asleep. His head was turned away from her, exposing his bare neck. She entered his room and closed the door behind her. Alex finished reading just as the oil diffuser cycle came to an end. Blue mist dispersed into the air as the magical walls vanished.
"Your story is all wrong," Natasha said. Alex's cheeks burned. "What do you mean?" he asked, unable to meet her eyes. This was part of the reason why he never shared his stories with anyone else. The slightest criticism was a hornet's sting.
"The girl. She turns into a vampire at the end, right?"
"Right."
"But that can't be. She never gets bitten by one."
"That's the whole idea," Alex said, hating the defensive tone in his voice. "I wanted to do something different, so I made the mirror creature turn her into a vampire by taking her reflection."
"But that's not how it works," Natasha said in a petulant tone. "I'm surprised at you, storyteller. I thought you knew better than that."
Alex considered arguing, but he could see that it wouldn't do any good. Natasha would never understand that he was trying to do something creative. In her mind, the story had simply been inaccurate.
"Sorry," Alex said. "Apology accepted," replied Natasha. She smiled smugly, like a know-it-all who had just proved the teacher wrong. "Fortunately for you, I'm a witch, which makes me an expert in these matters. I'll be sure to let you know if you get any other details wrong in the future."
"Can't wait," Alex muttered under his breath.
Natasha stood up and pressed her ear against a wall. After a few moments, she nodded with satisfaction.
"Good news," she said. "Your story might not have made any sense, but it still got the job done."
Alex's face flushed, this time with anger instead of embarrassment. He was tired of hearing his writing criticized.
"What do you mean, got the job done?"
he snapped, ignoring Yasmin's look of warning.
"What are you even listening to?"
Natasha gave him an appraising look.
"One of those, are you?"
she asked, rubbing her hands together.
"Curious type? Got to know what makes the clock tick, the rain fall? Not so fond of that characteristic, Alex. Leads to trouble."
Alex swallowed nervously as Natasha took a step closer to him.
"Sorry," he said. "I just thought it might make a good story, you know? Noises in the walls, creepy stuff."
"Always the little author,"
Natasha said, though it was clear by the look on her face that she didn't believe him.
"You're sure you're not curious about the apartment itself? Maybe you think you could figure out a way to escape, if only you knew its secrets."
"No," Alex said. "It's not like that, it..."
Natasha snapped her fingers in his face. Alex flinched, expecting a spell, but she just wanted him to stop talking.
"Since you're being so forthcoming with me," Natasha said, spitting out the word forthcoming in a way that implied its opposite, "I'll do the same for you. The dark magic that keeps this apartment up and running is very old and not quite what it used to be. Sometimes things shift out of alignment and grind together like a car that's been driven too many miles. When that happens, the walls shake. Cracks appear."
Alex nodded, remembering his first day in the apartment, how he thought he was in the middle of an earthquake.
"The thing about dark magic, though, it thrives on nightmares," Natasha said. "When you read it a scary story, you soothe its aches and pains, and then it can rest easy again, at least for a little while."
Alex watched Natasha carefully as she spoke. The smirk on her face made it clear that she was keeping something from him, and that she wanted him to know that she was keeping something from him. She was teasing him with half-truths.
"Are you saying the apartment is alive?"
Alex asked. Natasha snorted with laughter.
"Now that's a crazy idea," she said. "Maybe you can write a story about it."
9. What grows with no light? Alex's new life in apartment 4E settled into a predictable routine. During the day, he pretended to write in the library while combing the stacks for another entry written by the mysterious girl. It was slow going. Not only did Alex need to examine every page of every book, but he kept getting distracted by the stories themselves, often losing himself in reading for hours on end. It was the only way he could escape the apartment. At night, Alex read aloud while Natasha sat in her misting room. She didn't offer any more information about the purpose of the blue mist, and Alex didn't ask, though he did develop a theory. After each story, the witch listened to the wall for a moment and then patted it like an obedient steed. Alex didn't completely buy her explanation about the dark magic of the apartment being appeased by his narrative offerings, but he kept these doubts to himself. No good could come of questioning her. Besides, he liked sharing his stories. Maybe Natasha was overly fond of correcting him, especially if the story contained any magic, but at least Alex didn't have to worry about the witch thinking he was a freak for having such a dark imagination. As Natasha said again and again, they were one and the same. "The same darkness that runs through Natasha's veins runs through my own," Alex thought. It scared him.
Alex wished he could talk to Yasmin about all of this and share his exciting discovery in the library, but she continued to spurn his attempts at friendship. Eventually, he gave up, and they each settled into their section of the apartment. Alex in the library, Yasmin in the place behind the coat closet door. They barely exchanged a word all day. Alex grew lonely, with only his thoughts to keep him company. These inevitably turned to his family. He missed them so much. Days were bad. Nights were worse. The fact that his family was only 4 floors away didn't make him feel any better. They might as well have been on Saturn. Sometimes he imagined their reunion, playing it in his head like the end of a cheesy movie. I knock on our apartment door. Mom and Dad answer. They don't hug me at first. They're in shock. They can't believe it's really their son, safe and sound. And then it starts. The tears, the hugs, the kisses. Even John gives me an affectionate fist tap. Alex longed to make this fantasy a reality. There was only one way to do it. Escape. He wished he could search the apartment more thoroughly to see if he had missed a clue, but it was impossible. Lenore could be anywhere. Besides, if there was an exit, he knew exactly where it would be. Through Natasha's bedroom door. Alex doubted that there was anything special about the actual bedroom itself. His interest was in the magical room accessed by the bone key. He had only seen Natasha enter this way once, and she had checked around carefully before slipping the bone key inside, shooing Alex away when she saw him standing at the end of the hallway. Whatever was behind that door was so important that she didn't want Alex catching a single glimpse. He was dying to know what it was, just like he was dying to know what Yasmin did in the coat closet each day. Unfortunately, the only way to find out was to steal Natasha's bone keys, which she kept in her pocket at all times. Alex wasn't desperate enough to try something that crazy. Not yet, at least. Days passed. Alex searched the library, told his stories, dreamed of escape. He imagined that things would have continued in this fashion if it hadn't been for the danglers. Alex had been combing the stacks all morning with nothing to show for it but blurry eyes and an aching back. He cleaned his glasses on the bottom of his shirt while considering the number of books waiting to be searched. Even after a week, he had barely made a dent. This is going to take forever, he thought. He had found, to this point, exactly 6 other entries by the mystery writer, who he had dubbed Unicorn Girl. As far as Alex could tell, she had shelved the books at random, and as there were no dates to tell him their precise chronological order, he relied instead upon the rising desperation in their tone. Thus, the earliest 2 entries, Alex believed, were drawings of unicorns, little more than cheerful graffiti in the margins. The next one was a list.
Things I miss. Mom. Dad. Ice cream. Jude, sometimes. Raindrops.
Alex, whose mind often wandered to his life before the apartment, knew exactly how Unicorn Girl felt. He also thought it was funny how she put Jude, who he assumed was her brother, after ice cream. It made him feel like he knew her a little bit. The 4th entry, on the other hand, just made him sad. 5 sentences formed a heart around a carefully rendered sketch of a unicorn pendant.
My special pin, from Mom and Dad. I wear it close to my heart and touch it when I need to remember them better. When they get fuzzy in my brain, I will never, ever, never take it off.
Fuzzy in my brain? Alex wondered. Does that mean she's starting to forget her parents? How long has she been Natasha's prisoner at this point? According to the 5th entry,
even Unicorn Girl didn't know.
Today I tried to figure out how long I'd been here. Couldn't. The days and nights get all mixed up. I asked the witch how long, but she wouldn't tell me. The witch don't tell me nothing. She just wants her story every night. I'm so tired of reading her scary stories. I hate her. I've been looking for a spell book, thinking if I could do magic, then I could make her pay. But the only books here are stories. Stupid, useless stories. I seen a movie where this guy with a big beard made scratches in a prison wall so he could remember how long he'd been there. I should have done that. Except I never thought it would be this long. And now it's too late to start.
Just thinking about this entry depressed him. When Unicorn Girl had first been captured, she believed that Natasha was a lonely woman who would eventually set her free. That hope and optimism was gone now. She had changed.
Is that what's going to happen to me?
Alex wondered. He hoped not. And if the final entry was any indication, maybe he could avoid such a fate.
I escape tonight. Everything is set.
I escape tonight, Alex thought, the three simple words quickening his heart.
Everything is set. That means she had a plan.
If so, it was entirely conceivable that she wrote it down. The answer that Alex sought might be waiting somewhere in the library. It was great news, spectacular news. If Unicorn Girl had really written her plan down, and if he could find it. He had the sneaking suspicion that it wasn't going to happen today. He considered taking a break from his search and reading for a while. A slim volume titled The Maze Inside the Labyrinth had caught his eye, but instead sat at the table and opened his notebook.
I should try to write something, he thought, just in case Natasha starts getting suspicious.
This notebook, the one with the peeling cover, was the only one he had used since coming to apartment 4E. He had already read most of the stories, but Alex wasn't worried. He still had the two other notebooks in his backpack. Last night, he had flipped through them just to see what was there. Some of the stories had been written when he was only 8 or 9, and Alex didn't think that they were good enough to share. Others were little more than unfinished ideas that had fizzled out like defective fireworks. Even excluding those, however, Alex still had over 40 stories in the bank.
That's plenty for now, he thought, closing the notebook. No need to worry about it.
There was a knock at the door. Alex pushed his chair back, unsure who it could be. When Yasmin came to tell him that it was dinner time every night, she simply walked into the library without knocking. And although Natasha had never actually checked on him, Alex doubted that she would be so polite.
Could it be someone else? He thought. Maybe the apartment lured a new kid inside?
He inched the door open and peeked cautiously through the gap. It was Yasmin. Usually her face was flat and expressionless, as though her emotions were a secret she wanted to keep hidden from the world. Today, however, Yasmin was visibly upset. She rocked back and forth on her heels while twisting the bottom of her t-shirt into a knot.
I need your help, she said.
With what?
Alex asked.
Something happened, and...
Yasmin pulled the brim of her Mets cap tight over her forehead and closed her eyes, as though trying to wish the entire situation away.
This is a mistake, she said, wrapping her arms around herself. I'm sure I can figure out a way... to fix it on my own. I shouldn't expect you to...
She took a few steps back.
Yasmin, Alex said, let me help. Whatever it is, you don't have to do it alone.
She stared at him a moment with a dubious expression on her face. Finally, she nodded.
I'll have to get the extra pair of goggles first, she said. One of the lenses is cracked.
but I think it'll still work. Why do I need goggles?
To protect your eyes.
I know what goggles do. I meant, and see if you can find a pair of gloves, Yasmin said, cutting him off. Thick ones.
What exactly are we doing? Alex asked.
It'll be easier to explain once we're inside, Yasmin said. She smiled weakly.
You wanted to know what I do every day, right? Well, you're about to find out.
Once Alex had tracked down two mismatched gloves, one bright pink, the other with a small hole in the left pinky, he met Yasmin in front of the coat closet door. She handed him a pair of yellow-tinted goggles that looked like something you might wear during science lab. Alex slipped them over his eyes. The band was too tight around his head, but he didn't want to take the time to adjust it. He was afraid that any hesitation might give Yasmin the opportunity to change her mind.
"Let's go," Yasmin said.
"What about her?"
Alex asked, nodding his head toward Lenore. The cat sat in the middle of the living room floor, watching them with interest. She had stayed out of Alex's way since he told Natasha that he needed solitude in order to work, but every so often he caught her staring at him with cold, green eyes. The witch already seemed to dislike the cat, and by stripping Lenore of her library duty, Alex had diminished her value even further. If she had a chance at redemption, he was certain she would take it.
"Lenore's going to come whether we like it or not," Yasmin said. "It'll be much worse if we try to lock her out. Then Natasha will really think we're up to something."
She slid the bone key into the keyhole and pulled the door open. The expensive coats that normally weighted down the rod were no longer there. Instead, Alex saw an open expanse of darkness, like a cavern. The dimensions were impossibly huge, but he wasn't as fazed by that as he would have been a week ago. Lenore passed between them and vanished into the murk.
"You can't see anything at the start," Yasmin said, "so just follow my footsteps and try to keep up."
"There's no light at all?" Alex asked.
"Not the kind you're thinking of," she said. "That reminds me, close the door behind you."
Alex didn't like the idea of plunging them into total darkness, so when Yasmin turned around, he left the door open a crack. It made him feel a little better, knowing that there was still the slightest thread of light in this place.
"We should have brought a flashlight," he said, following the echo of Yasmin's footsteps.
"That's the last thing you want to do," she said. "Besides, you don't really need it. Just keep walking straight. It's not far. See, you're about to pass through a big curtain here."
Her voice was suddenly muffled.
"It's on the other side."
Alex, walking through the darkness with hands outstretched, felt something heavy and smooth hanging from the ceiling. It reminded him of those lead aprons that dentists made you wear when they x-rayed your teeth. There was a seam in its center. Alex slipped through it and gasped with wonder. Alex liked to write about things that didn't exist. He saw them clearly enough in his imagination, but in order to paint a picture in the reader's mind, he created links to the real world. For that reason, he might describe a monster as a scaly rat with wings, or compare the smell of a sun-baked zombie to a liverwurst sandwich left in a locker over summer vacation. The sight before him now was so remarkable, however, that there was nothing on earth with which to compare it. Alex could only describe it in terms of imaginary things, a phosphorescent garden on some alien planet, a neon forest hidden at the center of the earth.
"What is this place?"
Alex asked, staring slack-jawed at the long tables that stretched into the distance. From clay pots and long lacquer boxes grew a dizzying variety of flora, whose violent colors exploded in the dark. In some cases, they resembled plants and flowers familiar to Alex, a lily the color of hibiscus tea, yellow sunflowers like streaks of colored chalk on a blackboard, a tiny cactus, its needles tipped with red. In most cases, however,
The plants were unlike anything that Alex had ever seen. Some breathed, some snapped, some chewed. The air was filled with the musty smell of growing things, but there was something slightly spoiled beneath it all, as though someone had committed a murder and hid the body to rot. Alex was both exhilarated and afraid. "It's a nursery," Yasmin said. Her white shirt glowed in the dark, like she was about to play a game of laser tag. "Well, that's what Natasha calls it, at least. Except these aren't normal plants, as you probably noticed. They're meant to grow at night. You put them under direct sunlight or even a light bulb, and they'd be dead in an hour. That's why we use blacklight instead." Long fluorescent tubes dangled above the tables. They gave off a faint purplish glow. "Isn't blacklight what they use to make bloodstains show up at crime scenes?" Alex asked, remembering something he had read while doing research on forensic investigations for a story. "Is it?" Yasmin asked. He expected to hear disgust in her voice, just like other kids when his gruesome interests spilled into the conversation, but instead, there was only mild interest. "The only time I've ever seen black lights in the real world was at this indoor mini-golf place. All the windmills and golf balls and stuff glowed in the dark, just like this, except without the magic plants." "These plants are magic?" Alex asked. "It's a witch's nursery," Yasmin said. "What did you expect? Geraniums? Come on, we need to hurry." She set off between the tables, walking at a fast clip. Alex had to practically run to keep up. "If these plants are magic," he asked, "what do they do?" "Nothing yet," Yasmin said. "They're just ingredients. You have to put them together the right way for anything to happen." An electric thrill ran through Alex's body. "Are you talking about magic potions?" he asked. "According to Natasha, no one wants potions anymore," Yasmin said. "Customers refuse to put up with the taste. These days, it's all essential oils. People put a few drops in these misters, like the kind you use to make the room smell good, and breathe in the magic." She sighed, remembering something. "That reminds me. I have to check the distillers. I started a new batch of wealth oil yesterday." "You're the one who makes them?" Alex asked in amazement. "Anyone can do it," Yasmin said, though he thought he detected a hint of pride in her voice. "There's no magic involved. You just have to follow the recipe, like cooking." "What about the blue oil that Natasha puts in her diffuser?" Alex asked. "Are you the one who..." "No way," Yasmin said. "I make the harmless stuff, like the oil that will give you good luck on a job interview. Natasha's not stupid. She doesn't teach me how to make anything that can hurt her." "Do you at least know what the blue oil is for?" Alex asked. Yasmin walked faster, clearly uncomfortable with the change in topic. "Never really thought about it," she mumbled. "I have a theory," Alex said, catching up with her. "It's total fairy tale stuff, but that doesn't mean I'm wrong. Natasha looks like she's, what, 28, 30? I think she's a lot older than that, and it's the blue mist that keeps her young. So many things start to make sense then. The way the apartment is decorated, the furniture, the wallpaper, those creepy little statues of kids, it's like a grandma's house, you know? And all those books in her library, some of them are ancient. I'm sure she's been collecting them for decades, maybe even centuries." Yasmin stopped short and turned to face him. "It's best not to talk about things like this," she said sharply. "It doesn't concern me, or you." Her eyes flitted around the room and then settled on Alex, urging him to silence. Finally, he understood. "I forgot about Lenore. She's probably standing nearby eavesdropping. The little spy will report anything we say about Natasha." "You're right," Alex said. "It's really none of my business what Natasha does." Yasmin gave him the slightest nod. "Now you get it." A tiny surge of joy sparked inside Alex. It felt good to talk to someone without using words. That was something that friends did. "What did you need my help with?" he asked as they started walking again. He fiddled with his goggles, which were beginning to fog up from the exertion.
"Almost there," Yasmin said, "and don't take your goggles off. The light can really hurt your eyes."
"I'm surprised Natasha cared enough to give you them in the first place."
"She doesn't care," Yasmin said. "I'm just no use to her if I'm blind."
As they moved, Alex glanced over at the long tables, his eyes jumping from wonder to wonder. Small placards, like you might find in a regular greenhouse, sat in front of each planter. "Widow orchid. Mix water with snake venom. Spritz daily. Demon's mane. Feed dried tarantula legs when petals are open. Beware of acid. Nightberries. Plant in soil from freshly dug grave. Water with a child's tears. Great for baking."
"You take care of all these plants by yourself?" Alex asked.
"Yep."
"Wow," he said, suddenly feeling guilty for his lazy days spent combing books in the library. "That's a lot of work for one person. How do you keep up?"
"I like to keep busy," Yasmin said. "Always have."
She paused to pluck a few needles from an orange herb and slip them in her pocket.
"It would be a lot easier if these plants weren't so fragile. Feed them the wrong thing, or at the wrong time, or in the wrong way, and bad things happen. Which is why I brought you here in the first place."
She scratched the back of her neck.
"I screwed up. Big time. I was so tired, and it's hard to read those little signs in front of each plant with these goggles on, and I ended up feeding a snapping vine rat's blood instead of bat's blood."
"You have both?"
"And cat's blood. There's a whole blood shelf. That's not the point. The point is, now the plant is, sick."
"Sick?"
"The good news is I know how to fix it. I'm sure Lenore's going to tell Natasha one way or the other, but I figure if everything is better already, that should help at least. Problem is, it isn't something I can fix on my own."
"We'll do it together then," Alex said. Yasmin removed her cap in order to fix a few strands of hair that had slipped free. Her face was ashen.
"You're nice," she said, "and I appreciate your help. But this still doesn't change anything. I don't want to be your friend. I don't want any friends. Not anymore."
There was no anger in the words, only sadness. Alex had assumed that Yasmin kept her distance because she thought he was a weirdo. Now he wondered if there was a different reason, something that didn't involve him at all.
"Why doesn't she want friends?"
Alex thought. He followed Yasmin deeper into the darkness. 10. Danglers. They walked between a series of long tables, their way lit by glowing plants. Alex passed a neon green flower with tooth-like petals that snapped at him as he passed, a miniature tree no bigger than a marble, and a perfect red rose that Yasmin warned him was the most dangerous thing in the entire nursery. Alex supposed that he should have been scared, but mostly he was just excited. He couldn't help it. Creepy plants were awesome. At last, Yasmin stopped walking.
"This is it," she said.
Alex followed her gaze to a tall trellis that had been erected on the opposite side of the tables. Vines twisted up, over and between the diamond-shaped spaces, their colors bright against the darkness. Some were spiky, others had thorns. One yellow vine hung lower than the rest, as though weighted down. Along its bottom dangled dozens of tiny sacks about the size of golf balls. Alex caught a whiff of something foul.
"That the vine?" he asked, holding his nose. "Yeah," Yasmin said. "It's gotten worse. We have to hurry."
You have something we can cut it down with? Yasmin scoffed.
If it was that easy, I would have done it myself, she said.
Look, you see this?
She leaned over the tabletop and pointed to one of the sacks hanging from the underside of the vine.
It's a dangler. They grow on sick plants. The magic kind, at least. Like an infection. This poor vine's got them everywhere now.
They leaned over the edge of the table for a closer look. The thin skin of the sack was pulled taut over a black shape, like a chrysalis.
What's inside? He asked.
Could be anything, Yasmin said. I've only seen two danglers actually open. The first one was just a regular old spider. The second one...
She fiddled with her cap.
I don't like to talk about the second one. Luckily, we got it right away.
We?
Alex asked, surprised.
Natasha actually helped?
Yasmin gave him a curt nod and continued. She seemed eager to change the topic as quickly as possible.
Right now, the thing inside this dangler is just chilling, she said, sucking up plant juice. We cut down the vine, though, and it's like taking a bottle away from a baby. It'll wake up. They'll all wake up.
Alex jumped in surprise as the sack in front of him suddenly twitched, causing a chain reaction that continued all the way down the vine, like a string of lights caught in the wind.
If we can't cut down the vine, he said, then what do we do? Remove each and every dangler, Yasmin said. One at a time. If we're careful enough, whatever's growing inside the dangler won't realize that it's been cut off from its food, at least for the first minute or two. That's more than enough time to kill it.
Alex examined the sack in front of him. It dangled slightly from the vine on a purplish strand, like a fruit on its stem. If you managed to twist it just the right way, it looked like it would come off. Still, he couldn't imagine touching the fragile-looking skin without the entire thing bursting in his hand.
If the dangler breaks, he started. Then the thing inside wakes up instantly, Yasmin said. In your hands. Not a good thing.
My hands? Alex asked.
Don't worry, Yasmin said. I'll take care of the hard part. You just have to... Here, I'll show you.
She handed him a pair of cacti that glowed like phosphorescent coral, and then took two of her own. Alex followed her the lengths of three tables until they reached a tiny metal door on the floor. Yasmin placed the cacti around the door like work lights, and then lifted it by a curved handle, revealing a hole filled with swirling darkness.
"I'll hand you the dangler," Yasmin said. "You throw it into the void here."
The void?
It's magic, Yasmin said. There's a few of them in the nursery. The one closest to the door is where I take the trash out every day. Basically, this is the world's greatest garbage chute. You drop something down there, it's gone forever. So, you know, don't stick your hand in.
I don't think you have to worry about that, Alex said, taking a cautious step back from the hole.
They returned to the beginning of the vine.
Lenore was waiting for them. The cat had found a good spot and settled in, confident that something was going to go terribly wrong and wanting to have the best view possible when it happened. Stay put, Yasmin told Alex. I'll twist a dangler off and hand it to you.
How do I make sure the sack doesn't break?
Alex asked, wishing he had found better gloves.
Be gentle, Yasmin said. Like when someone blows bubbles and you catch one on the tip of your finger.
They always pop when I do that.
Okay, she said, not encouraging, but that's cool. How about this? Hold your hands together, like cupping water, only the water might eat you if you drop it.
Alex did as she asked. His hands only trembled a little.
Perfect, Yasmin said, though she didn't look very confident. We better get started. Try to go as fast as possible, but not too fast. Make sure you don't trip, and maybe don't breathe too much. Also, the danglers sometimes move, so be ready for that.
Anything else?
Alex asked between gritted teeth.
Nope, that about covers it.
Yasmin climbed onto the rickety table. It wobbled beneath her weight.
"Shouldn't you be wearing gloves, too?" Alex asked.
"Need my fingers free," she said. "This takes a delicate touch."
Yasmin reached up and pinched the spot where the sack joined the vine between her thumb and index fingers. Then she twisted gently. The sack resisted at first, but finally came free, sliding into Yasmin's palm like an egg yolk. She rushed it to Alex's waiting hands. Even through the thick gloves, he could feel the heat of the dangler, warm with life. He carried it as quickly as he could to the hole in the floor. Just as he was about to open his hands, Alex felt the small shape inside the amber fluid twitch suddenly, as though it had just woken up. He dropped it. The darkness swirled faster for just a moment, as though swallowing, and then the dangler was gone.
"See?" Yasmin said with a crooked smile. "Easy."
The children shared a look. There was something different between them now, a link that hadn't been there before. For the first time, they were acting as a team. They moved on to the next one. Hours ticked by to the steady rhythm of work. Twist, pull, walk, drop. Twist, pull, walk, drop. The danglers came in all shapes and sizes. Most were insectoid in nature, but Alex occasionally glimpsed fur and teeth through the thin sacks. Every so often a dangler shifted in his hands, usually at the last moment, as if sensing what was coming. After nearly losing his hold on one, Alex began to cup them between his hands, like trapping a firefly. He even did this with the danglers that were little more than squishy ooze, though he suspected that these ones hadn't grown correctly and would never wake up at all. Into the void they went. By mid-afternoon, two-thirds of the vine had been cleared. With their goal now in sight, Yasmin grew even more focused. Alex's energy, on the other hand, had begun to flag. His stomach grumbled, and his hands itched like crazy from the gloves. Nevertheless, he refused to suggest a break. He wanted to prove to Yasmin that she could rely on him. "We need to work together," he thought. "Share what we know. That's our best chance of getting out of here." As they neared the end of their task, however, he wondered if he was kidding himself. Is helping Yasmin today going to actually change anything? She hadn't said a word to him in hours. What happens if things go back to the way they were after this? What if she refuses to talk to me? He couldn't let that happen. This might be his only chance to convince her that they were on the same side. I should tell her about Unicorn Girl, he thought. I just have to make sure that Lenore doesn't overhear us. If Natasha finds out what I know, she might kick me out of the library. Or worse. He glanced over at the cat. For the first hour, she had tracked their every move. When it became clear that nothing interesting was going to happen, however, she placed her head on her paws and closed her eyes. Every so often, she would hiss in her sleep and flicker in and out of visibility. Yasmin, Alex whispered as she walked along the tabletop, searching for the next dangler. Can we talk? She gave him an annoyed look, anxious to get the work done.
You need a break? She asked. Because Natasha's going to be back soon. We should push on.
That's not it, Alex said.
Then what?
He was just about to tell her when he took another sidelong glance at Lenore. She wasn't there anymore. He heard the tiniest creak of the table to his right, saw a pile of soil flatten as though pressed down by an invisible body. She's listening, Alex thought. She probably wasn't ever asleep at all. That was just a trick.
Yasmin lifted her Mets cap and wiped the sweat from her forehead. You ever been to City Field? Alex asked awkwardly. He knew he couldn't talk about Unicorn Girl with Lenore around, and baseball had been the first topic that popped into his head. Yasmin gave him a strange look and then turned her attention to the sack dangling before her. Alex figured that was the end of it, that she would ignore this question just like every other question he had ever asked